Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
America's voice of reason. Boyd Matheson.
On Utah's home for elevated conversation.
Inside Sources on KSL News Radio.
Often in our country, when you hear the name Neville Chamberlain, many people don't know who Neville Chamberlain was. And those who do usually assume that it's a pejorative, that you're describing someone as who has either been deceived or naive or any of the above, or an accomplice to, or you can put all kinds of different things into there. And the interesting thing is a lot of that's been used just in the latest battle leading up to the vote over the weekend on funding for Ukraine. And Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, due to her opposition to that military aid to Ukraine, has been called a Neville Chamberlain. Now, really interesting, as we always do, you got to get past the headlines and you got to think again about what you think you know, even about someone like Neville Chamberlain. And someone who did just that for our friends at the Dispatch, Kevin Williamson, national correspondent for the Dispatch, had a brilliant piece late last week and joins us on the line. Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good to talk to you.
So just walk us through this. I just found your writing on this so spot on and so instructive, because it's so beyond the headlines in terms of what we should be thinking as we approach some of these hard decisions in our country.
Yeah, well, you know, because we are for some reason governed by the dumbest people in the country, there was this sort of spat between Marjorie Taylor Greene and a Democratic congressman, which they were offering amendments to the Ukraine bill that were essentially trolling amendments. You know, she had this stupid thing of, well, if you vote for this, then you should be required to join the Ukrainian army. And the Democrat responded with a measure that would have renamed her office in Washington, the Neville Chamberlain room. And the idea of this, of course, would be that he's trying to call her, you know, a stooge or a tool of a foreign power or something like that. And Neville Chamberlain's name gets used that way a lot, but that's not really who he was. And so for some reason, it has fallen to me to be the journalistic guardian of the name of Neville Chamberlain. So Chamberlain, just to start with, of course, I mean, you know, everyone who knows about Chamberlain knows about the Munich Conference and trying to make a deal with Hitler that would have kept Britain out of World War II. That was what he thought he was doing. And he came back and he waved a piece of paper around, said he'd achieved peace in our time. And this was obviously wrong. But Chamberlain wasn't, you know, some simpleton, and he wasn't some, you know, appeasing accommodationist either. He was a guy who had come to national politics relatively late in life. He was almost 50 when he was first elected to Parliament. There's no British prime minister that was ever older than that when he was first elected to Parliament. He'd been mayor of Birmingham before that and really been involved in municipal government. He was a kind of old-fashioned, you know, workhorse politician who did a lot of, you know, just really municipal-level good governance kind of stuff. He pretty quickly figured out that he had made a mistake. He owned up to his mistake. A lot of people forget that it was up to Neville Chamberlain, who was still the prime minister for the first several months of the war, to be the guy to go on the radio and tell the British people that, you know, we're now at war with Nazi Germany. And it's an interesting announcement if you go read it, because he's pretty honest about, you know, where he came from and what a bitter disappointment this was to him, how much he had sort of put on a line to try to keep peace, and it hadn't worked out. He was also at this point terribly, terribly sick. He had intestinal cancer, and he was in the last months of his life, and he continued working through, I guess, the end of September of 1940, and was dead by the second week of November.
Wow. And I think it's so interesting, and I love the way you described it in your piece at the Dispatch of, you know, what was it that he had shot for? And you even quoted Winston Churchill as he eulogized his formal rival in Parliament. Frame that for us.
Yeah, well, you know, Churchill was at times pretty savage on Chamberlain and his reputation, but he also kept him in his war cabinet, and he understood that he owed a certain political debt to Chamberlain as well. And, you know, what Churchill wrote about him and said in his eulogy was that, yes, he had been deceived and he had made a mistake, but he'd made it out of really the best of human motivations to try to keep his country out of what was sure to be a terrible and ruinous and horrifying war, which it was. You know, one of my favorite things about Chamberlain, you know, I'm an Eisenhower guy, and I sort of I admire people who don't get too carried away with titles and grandiosity in public life. And Neville Chamberlain's father had also been in national politics, but he was an industrialist. You know, that got you branded as a kind of middle class non-aristocrat. And so even though he had been a minister of government and all that, when he retired, he was not offered the, you know, kind of traditional retirement and the place in the House of Lords and all that stuff. And to which normally someone of his stature would have received, but he couldn't because of, you know, he didn't because of class reasons. So when Chamberlain was at the end of his life, Churchill, on behalf of the king, offered him the Order of the Garter, which is the highest civic award in England. And he turned it down and he said, "I prefer to die plain Mr. Chamberlain like my father before me." And I think that, you know, speaks well of what kind of man he was. He was not a, you know, self-aggrandizing kind of figure like our, you know, sort of modern troll politicians who are all seem to be, you know, auditioning for positions on cable news shows rather than trying to be the leaders of a self-governing free republic.
Yeah, no question about that. I love the last line there from Churchill when he talked about the pursuit of peace, even at great peril.
Yeah.
Is such an important thing. As we close out, just in our last minute here, Kevin, give us a sense of what else we should be thinking about. Obviously, we have so many that are into the performative politics that are, you know, looking for that gig on the cable news or their latest clickbait. It was amazing over the weekend. Within seconds of the vote in the House, I got fundraising emails from a host of people in Congress. What is it that we need to change? What are some of the other things we should remember or learn from someone like Neville Chamberlain that could be very applicable to where we are today?
Well, I think one of the things to keep in mind is that there are good ways and bad ways to make mistakes. And sometimes people make mistakes trying to do the right thing, and sometimes people make mistakes out of bad motivations, out of fear or greed or selfishness or bad political calculation. And sometimes people make mistakes because they're trying to do big things that are beyond their powers. Mm. You know, I think a good example of that would be, I think most people in history 50, 100 years from now will probably come to the conclusion that the Iraq War was a mistake. But George W. Bush got into that, I think, with the best of motivations. He really thought that he could, in launching this campaign, transform the Middle East for the better and make the world in that way a much better place. There are mistakes that are made out of good motivations. They're still horrible mistakes with, you know, regrettable, unimprovable, unfixable consequences. And I think that's probably going to be one. But, you know, Dwight Eisenhower made a lot of mistakes, and George Washington made a lot of mistakes, and Abraham Lincoln made a lot of mistakes, but they made the right kinds of mistakes for the right reasons.
Yeah, that's so important, whether they're out of fear or greed or personal aggrandizement, all of those things can be part of that that problem there. Kevin Williamson, national correspondent for The Dispatch, great piece. Everyone should check that out at thedispatch.com. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
All right. We'll step aside for a quick break. A lot of lessons in there in terms of how you make mistakes, why you make mistakes. Sometimes swinging big for peace leads to some mistakes. Sometimes the greed of your own agenda causes mistakes, and they're very different animals. We need to make sure we distinguish the difference. We'll be right back.